Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International. The Tarot trainers are experts in helping you and your business to achieve, lead, and outclass in every situation. Learn more at tero.com.
Hey, welcome back to Insight on Business, the News Hour. Grateful that you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. With me is Robert Palmer. No, not that Robert Palmer. This Robert Palmer. He is the General Counsel and Government Affairs Director for the Iowa League of Cities. And we're going to be talking about the National Civility Summit for Local Governments. Robert, welcome to the Business News Hour. Grateful to have you here.
Yeah, well, Michael, thank you very much for having me here on this snowy day.
Yeah.
Happy to be in a warm coffee shop.
It is, it's a Caribou Coffee. We're on Ingersoll, downtown Des Moines, and one of my favorite places to do these interviews because I like the ambiance, the people that are hanging around and doing this kind of stuff.
The wood interior feels good on a cold day like this.
It certainly does, and it's a great place and good people. Robert, talk to me a little bit. What is the General Counsel and Government Affairs Director? What do you do?
That is a great question that I am often asking myself. So,
right.
On one hand, I serve as the General Counsel to the Iowa League of Cities. So any legal work, whether that be contracts or your standard kind of legal matters, those come across my desk. The other side is the Government Affairs Director. And so in that capacity, my team and I work with the Iowa Legislature, our members, and we talk about policies that impact cities and try and advocate on behalf of those communities. But really in our world, advocacy looks a lot more like education.
Mm.
We want to help legislators understand how cities operate, what cities need. And if you understand those struggles, our hope is that we're all kind of on the same team trying to get to the same place.
Isn't it interesting, though, that legislators may not have any idea how cities operate?
Yeah, I think it is. And, we have citizen legislators that come in and they can have a wide variety of backgrounds. I also think it's interesting, and this is just really a testament to the complexity of cities, that even some former city officials from certain size, smaller communities, for example, may not understand the struggles of the larger communities.
Mm.
But conversely to that, the larger communities, which have extensive staffs and others that can help them work through issues, they may not understand some of the struggles that the smaller communities without those staffs go through.
And staffing is so important. It's a very fluid business, being an elected official in a city government. We watch people come and go all the time.
Yes.
And the length of stay for city administrators or whatever is relatively short, 3 to 5 years, they say. And so you're always kind of in flux. And so things do change.
That's right.
On a regular basis.
That's absolutely right.
How many member cities in the Iowa League?
Well, I will start by saying there are 940 cities in the state of Iowa.
Really?
And we have over, I believe it's 870, what we would call direct members. Now, quick caveat there. We have a lot of very small communities in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because they haven't filled out a membership application, at that level, I don't question if you're a community of 30 people and you call asking for support or a question. We don't check a membership list in that capacity.
We just did an interview at the Iowa League of Cities annual meeting. It was in Waterloo, and interviewed two mayors.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. One was from a tiny town in northwest Iowa, and he was the chair or the president of the association, and I think 380 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the current mayor of Ames is in that chair now with 60,000 people. And it's the difference, but the similarities are striking.
That's exactly right. And we try and find that core similarity. As elected official, our philosophy is around home rule, the ability for a local official to address the concerns in their community. Well, that can mean different things to different communities. So not all of my cities are going to utilize that control in the same way.
Mm.
And so we try and work with our members to make sure that however they and their communities want to utilize that, that's the freedom they have.
Yeah, and home rule is one of those things that is driven home all the time because things change, policies change,
right?
And people in the legislature change, and so it's important that I think that elected officials and city administrators continue to bang home the close-knit relationship between city government and its citizens. it's not as removed as what it is under the Golden Dome.
You know, that is exactly right. And it's that philosophy that led me to think about how we should discuss civility at the local level with local governments, because it is government just like you have state government and federal government, but it's also different in the sense that it's hyper-local, right? Mm-hmm. It's in your communities. The decisions you make are affecting those in your communities, and it doesn't just stop at City Hall, right? If I'm in D.C., maybe I get to fly back home, or I'm going to a campaign event somewhere else, whereas here, you leave City Hall, and you go to the gas station, you go to the local restaurant, you go to a sporting event on the weekend, your grocery store, and you're still in that community with those people that are impacted, and I think you know, and our elected officials know, that you're going to hear from those people in the grocery store, in the gas station, and that has an impact on how you look at issues, and I think the desire to have a really collaborative and responsive local government.
Yeah, when you are a civil servant, I think the emphasis should be on servant.
That's right.
Yeah, yep. It's really important stuff. Robert Palmer is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be now talking about National Civility Summit for Local Government. What does this mean?
Yeah, it's a great question. We had to think of a name to describe a gathering or an event of local government officials, whether those be elected or appointed officials, coming together to discuss civility and what that means to cities and to city officials such as themselves. So civility has been discussed by many, many great people, right? On all of this, I stand on the shoulders of giants, and I tell people all the time, I'm not creating the wheel here. What we're trying to do is to look at this discussion around civility and say, what does it mean to local government officials, so the human element, and then what does it mean to local governments as entities? And I consider that to be a little bit more of the structural element.
When we talk about civility, this has been under the microscope for quite some time. I mean, we have seen school boards impacted with uncivil behavior. We've seen cities impacted as well. So I would think that this is a timely topic for people to discuss. What do you hope comes from this summit? And first of all, when is it? So we get that on.
December 7th. And we will be doing it virtual this year because when we began planning, we were in the midst of the pandemic. And the only way to ensure you could pull it off was to look at doing it virtually. Next year, we do hope to be in person.
Well, and we will have links, ladies and gentlemen, to all of this up on the radio blog. So tell us about what you hope to accomplish through this summit. How long is it? And what's the agenda?
Yeah, so the initial summit will be approximately 4 hours long. And the way I look at the content from a very high level is to divide it up amongst the human element and the structural element. On the human element, we really want to look at how can city officials utilize behaviors, tools, tactics to promote or provide a framework for civil interaction. You and I sitting across the table from each other talking. What do we need to know? What types of things could we be thinking to make this a more civil interaction? Not that it's not, but some interactions, as you know, at the local level aren't always there. So what can we empower the local government official, whether it's appointed or elected, what tools can they have to try and be that leader in a civil discussion of promoting the civility within? The second avenue, and this is what's really specific to cities as I see it, is the structural component. When we look around the country, and specifically in Iowa, because that's where I spend a lot of my focus, there are certain policies that cities have adopted and that some cities have not adopted that can be very helpful when it becomes contentious, and you need that policy in place before a situation arises. So we want to talk about those policies and get them out to communities across the country, quite frankly. But as I look at Iowa, we have 500 cities below 500 in population. Now, you and I had talked earlier about staffing and what that can mean for communities. When you're below 500, a lot of it can be really responsive. You don't have the broad staff, you're not constantly reviewing every ordinance to see, and you're not always able to think ahead about, hey, we need to have this in place before a situation arises. Often the mentality can be, well, we've never had a situation. We did a survey a little bit earlier, and thankfully we found that most cities have not yet experienced what we would call a significant uncivil interaction. However, the broad majority of those that had all said that they had either had a policy in place that saved them or, and this was most important, wished they had had a certain policy in place prior to an event occurring. These can be as simple as, when do you do public comment? Or one that we're really looking at from the city perspective is, what does a city need to do when unruly behavior begins that's fair to the constituents, fair to those that want to speak, but maintains the ability to conduct business?
One of the things that I think is very helpful, I know in my community, that we have a dedicated time period that's all spelled out, how long the time period is, what can be discussed, what can't be discussed. And I think sometimes citizenry may not understand the focus of a city council and a mayor, because we can't take action on by ourselves, and it has to go through a process.
Exactly.
And that process can be frustrating for people if they're going, oh, wait a minute, I want those weeds cut down tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You can't do it like that. You know, there's all kinds of things. But back to the whole civility issue, one of the things I think, and I believe I took that quiz or that test, anyway, and I was surprised at the number of cities that don't have in place a procedure for public comment.
Right.
And was that surprising to you?
That's when we looked around. A lot of cities have been operating and doing what they need to do. They do a great job of it, keeping operations going. But, we talked earlier in the conversation about, is this the right time to be discussing it? I absolutely think this is the right time. However, as I look back, it's not lost on me that we've had events within the history of this country, of the world, where we could easily show uncivil behavior. So are things getting worse? Maybe, but I'm not 200 years old, really not in the position to say that. I can tell you that based on our survey, there is a perception both in Iowa and nationally that incivility is increasing. Now, you've got social media, you've got a variety of things occurring within politics, which can impact that. But we want to look at the cities and say, here are the tools that have worked for other communities, hear from them about how those tools work, and then look at whether or not you should input them in your community. So it doesn't surprise me that they didn't have that in place, and that's what we're trying to do at a very, very basic level. Say, hey, here are some of the things that you could have in place today to provide this framework for civil interaction. That's one way I would pause there to say, I look at cities through this lens as a structure, and it's the responsibility of that structure to provide a framework for civil interaction to occur. So we can't force someone to be civil, but we can remove obstacles
barriers,
to being civil.
Yes.
Barriers, excuse me. We can provide a framework that promotes it and provides for it. And I think if we start from the place that people want to be heard, and we need to accomplish that, we need to provide the opportunity for them to be heard, then structurally we need to say, how do we make sure that we're doing that? And so at the very basic sense, it's what policies are currently out there. And then looking into the future, it's what do we need to adopt? What types of things should we be thinking about? And one of the things I've learned from cities is that city officials like to learn from each other. And so that's really where we're starting this, is providing them the opportunity to discuss. This isn't Robert telling you, do this. This is, here are your colleagues discussing it, sharing best practices, tools, ideas, and let's learn from each other.
Yeah, one of the things I was so struck by at my first event that I attended for the Iowa League of Cities in Waterloo 2 months ago, I think it was, I don't know, but was the amount of people that I already knew in that space, because I've been kind of around for a long time. But secondly, about, I didn't hang out with my fellow city council people. I hung out with other people because I wanted to learn more about what they were thinking and what they were doing. And that was invaluable.
Yes, that is what I hear is one of the core goals of attending the Iowa League Conference. We've got a lot of great sessions, a lot of great training, but this is why we will continue to do this in person, because virtually you just can't provide the interaction and the exchange of ideas that you've just mentioned. And getting those people together, having the receptions, having opportunities to mingle over lunch, that's where the ideas are shared.
Yeah, it is. Robert Palmer is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, General Counsel and Government Affairs Director for the Iowa League of Cities. We're talking about the National Civility Summit for Local Governments. Happens on December 7. Now, who can come to this? Who can sign up for this? Who who do you want to show up?
You know, the audience is city officials, whether elected and appointed. But the truth is, anybody can show up. What we're doing is taking some of those tools and best practices in the civility area and sharing them with a specific audience. So, yes, our message will be directed kind of towards those people and the struggles that they're facing. But as you know, anybody could end up being a city official next year, right? They could run for election. They could be a past city official. They could be involved in their city on boards, commissions, other capacities, or just an interested citizen that wants to think about what government can be and what it should be.
And this is an educational point for individuals who are not only in city government, but folks that live in those communities.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and if it can prepare you a little bit better. For the future of your city. Robert Palmer is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the National Civility Summit that happens on December 7. That's really good to know because, you know, if it's a closed group, that's okay. But you know, if citizenry can come to something like this and have a little bit more of a leg up, that really does help. When we talk about civility, and this is a my thing, so forgive me, but I wrote a piece just not too very long ago for my congregation about respectfulness. Mm-hmm. You know, we can be very divergent in our views. I mean, I may not agree with your political or, you know, philosophical stance or your religious stance, whatever it happens to be. But if we can find common ground someplace that is respectful in the dialogue, that goes a long way, right?
Oh, that's absolutely right. And we see industries where that already has to occur, and it does occur at our city level as well. On the human side, we have to recognize that the other individual is a human with the same wants, needs, desires. Maybe they're not the same, but they have them as well. And so if we recognize that and we seek commonality. As an attorney, I know that that's a derogatory term to some, but as an attorney, you know, you're trained to be able to do that. You have to work with the other attorney that's on the other side. You have to work with the judges, and you're part of a community that reputation matters, and how, you know, your decorum, how you interact with others really matters. I see that in the Capitol as well. And so even though we think of politics as being an incredibly contentious place, in order to pass policy at any level, there's a certain amount of collaboration that has to occur. And so I think what we're looking at doing is providing some intentionality to that. And I also, this is the pitch for, you know, somebody who loves local governments. If we can't do it at the local government level, then we're not going to be able to do it anywhere. But I believe we can do it at the local government level. And Michael, this is where, when I started looking at this early on, I think local governments are the perfect place because of that. It's this engine of ideas and innovation, and we have the opportunity to do it. But I also think that local government officials are the best audience, right? This is the highest return on investment, or you could call it return on engagement. If you have a limited amount of time to work with one individual or a limited number of individuals to try and promote civility out in our society, out in our communities, local government officials are in their communities. They're a part of boards, committees, commissions. They're out talking to people on a daily basis. And then some of them continue to rise up through different levels of politics. So if we can get those civil behaviors in our community and begin promoting it there, then we can continue it as we have those officials move up all the way to the federal level. And I don't want to be as bold as to say we can change D.C., but we can certainly talk about some great ways that they should be interacting and hopefully have a positive impact.
What was the final question for you, Robert? What was the genesis of this? Why did you dream this thing up? What was the motivating factor?
Yeah. It's really interesting to think about that. And you have to go back to the beginning of the pandemic, essentially. When that occurred, I believe it was March 17th that we ended things in the Capitol and began sending people home, at least here in the state of Iowa. I know other states may have done different times. And so there was a certain process of reactions that we had to go through. The first was, how do we continue to operate government? We've got to keep going. We can't just turn this off, so to speak. And so we had to look at those core functions that we had to keep going. Now, in this time, we're looking at government in a different way because it has to get these core functions complete. But the people can't be in the same room as each other, not the elected officials and not the public in the same room as the elected officials. So we first start saying, okay, what's the structure to keep it operating? Then, as time went by, and unfortunately we had more time to think than we would like, you start thinking, all right, now we need to add back in some of those other components. We can get a bit more philosophical. And I started looking at the structure of what government could be if you didn't have the people and if we didn't have the engagement and the representative side of government. And that view of essentially a microphone and a camera and a television screen in a basement with no other people around, that is a possibility that's very concerning. So I started looking at that and saying, well, that's not what we want. And so if there are two functions of local government, to really simplify it, on one hand, we conduct business. On the other hand, we need to be responsive to the public, engage with them. That's what representative government is. And the concern that arises for me is if certain things impede the conducting of business, then it's the public side that will suffer. So there's a term for something called a heckler's veto. And this is essentially, to paraphrase it, somebody who comes in with the intention to disrupt the conducting of business because for a variety of reasons, maybe they don't believe in the system, maybe they don't like the policy. But that individual being able to disrupt the conducting of business has two effects, probably more, but two that are right on my mind. One, other individuals' voices are silenced. And so we have there where one voice can kind of deafen out the others. They can't speak. And the other side is that business will continue to be conducted. And it will be conducted with less interaction with the public because we have to conduct it. And that's not the world I think any of us want to get to. So my mind is focused on, how do we do this today? How do we do it better today? And then what tools, practices, policies, structure can we put in place to do it better in the future?
Good stuff. His name is Robert Palmer, ladies and gentlemen. He is with the Iowa League of Cities. He's the General Counsel and Government Affairs Director. We've been talking about the National Civility Summit for Local Governments. And yes, citizenry, as you heard, can take part in this as well. Robert, thanks so very much for doing this. I do appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
That once again is Robert Palmer from the Iowa League of Cities talking about the National Civility Summit that happens on December 7th. And yes, we will have links to that on the radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Robert Palmer, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe. Be well. Be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.